supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Well, fatigue, disinterest, not wanting to go to work, lack of clarity, and an all-consuming lethargy. Many of us have felt that. These are symptoms of burnout. And it's likely that all people who work feel that on occasion. But in the field of medicine, it's been shown that burnout is a growing problem for both doctor, patient, and doctor's families. A recent study found that one out of two doctors report show signs of serious burnout. Doctors are hitting that wall of exhaustion and depression at a higher rate than people in other stressful professions. Hospitals are especially fertile grounds for this problem. On today's show, we're going to talk about physician burnout and how it affects doctors and patients with two guests, Colin West and Liz Furin. But first, WHYY's Mike and Scott reports on what some hospitals are doing to address this issue.
Long hours, very sick patients, life and death decisions, night shift. After getting through a grueling residency training in a large Philadelphia hospital, Erin Lockhart was proud she could handle it all.
People say to you, I can't imagine doing that. That must be so hard. And there's some little like nerd that needs a gold star that's like, yes, I do it.
But a few years ago, still at the same hospital, Lockhart noticed a change in her attitude. She felt like her tasks just kept piling up and piling up with long lines of waiting, needy patients.
Having episodes at work where I just felt so overwhelmed, I needed to go like hide in a room for a second and like collect myself. And I just perceived that that shouldn't be happening when you're 5 or 6 years into your career and you're confident and, you know, otherwise happy.
The core demands of the job have always been tough, but experts say recent dramatic changes in how medicine is practiced and paid for add to the stress. Grading of outcomes, electronic records, intense cost pressure, it's a lot. Hospital doctors now talk more openly and frequently about leaving the profession or switching to calmer, more lucrative boutique practices.
We are right now right in between the old way of doing business in medicine and the new way of doing business in medicine.
Steven Sivak is chairman of medicine at Einstein Medical Center, a hospital in the north of Philadelphia.
The new way of doing business in medicine is known as accountable care, and that takes many forms. We're all challenged on how are we going to get from where we are to where we need to be.
Several issues fuel the angst of physicians. Many feel they're being told to shoulder more responsibility for patient outcomes, even as they are losing some control over how they treat their patients. Incomes are less assured, but the threat of lawsuits is constant. All this anxiety combined with the everyday stress of the job can be a toxic mix, affecting quality of care and staff retention. As major changes rock the system, hospital administrators try to create stable conditions within their own four walls.
Push this button.
At the hospital at the University of Pennsylvania, healthcare staff can take a break in a cozy center dedicated to rest and relaxation.
You can direct it to the upper body, the lower body.
Cushy massage chairs in peaceful, quiet rooms offer a place to take a deep breath between patients or to regroup after work. Steven Sivak says across town at Einstein, physicians have no such luxury.
We don't have a burnout center or burnout clinic or burnout sessions. We do have other sessions which begin with a B, and sometimes that helps the physicians blow off some steam.
Sivak says working at Einstein is demanding. It has a poor patient population facing many health and social issues. Despite that, turnover at the hospital is low. Sivak says a strong sense of camaraderie among the doctors helps. What keeps him from burning out is knowing that what he does matters.
Just the other day, I ran into one of my patients in the cafeteria, and she came up to me and she said, Dr. Sivak, thank you so much. I've been working with her blood sugar and her blood pressure. She said, I never cared about my health as much as I have since I became your patient. Thank you so much. And I have to say that made me feel terrific.
Many physicians rarely have such satisfying moments, says Guy Freed. He's chief medical officer at McGee Rehab in Philadelphia.
You are just a cog in the wheel, and just one piece out there, you can get burned out.
Freed says many doctors see patients during just one pit stop on their journey through the hospital, never knowing what happened to them.
Physicians have gone into medicine to help people to the extent that they are not seeing the fruits of their labor, that they are seeing the patients that they help. That can be a problem.
Freed's approach at McGee is to create care teams where doctors see patients throughout their stay at the hospital. He also frequently talks to staff about burnout to gauge when someone is exhausted and needs a break.
Hi, it's Dr. Lockhart. I was Paige.
Erin Lockhart recently changed jobs. She works at a smaller hospital where she's still busy.
Oh, yeah, and my pager's usually going off every 5 to 10 minutes. So trying to get a consistent, streamlined thought process is really hard.
But she says her work now feels manageable and she feels more supported.
You know, I'm regularly being asked by the leaders of the hospital how I'm doing and, you know, how they can help me do my job better. And that's nice. It feels really nice.
A caring boss, teamwork, even massage chairs may help. But in the absence of major system changes, many doctors say the threat of burnout will continue to follow them on their daily rounds.
That was Mike and Scott, WHYY's behavioral health reporter. Well, this is Voices in the Family, and we're talking about physician burnout today. We've got two guests, Colin West and Liz Farron. Later, we're going to hear from Erin Lockhart, the hospitalist in Mike and story. Colin West is a medical doctor. He's co-author of the article, Burnout and Satisfaction with Work-Life Balance Among U.S. Physicians. Some of his research at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota focuses on physician well-being. Colin, welcome to Voices.
Oh, thank you. I'm delighted to be with you.
Liz Farron is a clinical social worker at the Physicians Wellness Services in Minneapolis, where they find ways to ease physician burnout. Liz, hi. Glad you could join us.
Thank you very much, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we would love to hear from you. We're at 888-477-9499. If you're a doctor, give us a call. Tell us your story about burnout, how you're coping with your life as a physician. And if you're in the care of a doctor, encourage them to listen to today's show. And if you feel your doctor is burned out, give us a call. Tell us what that's like for you. Again, that number is 888-477-9499. Liz, let's start with you. We heard with in Mike's setup piece that physicians are working longer hours, seeing more patients, have more paperwork, and are under the threat of malpractice. Liz, is this true of all physicians, or is it mostly hospital-based doctors?
I think it's really true of all physicians, and I think that it's important to keep in mind that we're seeing an increasing amount of physicians that are employed by healthcare organizations. So we've really had that shift from private practices to employed physicians. And there's a number of things that go along with being an employed physician, some things positive, but others, you lose a lot of control, and I think that's probably a big factor contributing to the stress that they're talking about.
One of my closest friends is a physician and sold his practice to a larger organization. Said he couldn't afford to do it. He couldn't afford to stay in individual practice. The hours were too long. The paperwork is too formidable. So it seems like doctors in individual practices are dinosaurs anymore.
Yeah. Colin, I think it's certainly moving that way.
Colin, this article that I referred to, you surveyed over 7,000 physicians and found that nearly half had symptoms of burnout. What were the most common symptoms?
Well, when we speak about burnout in our research studies, we're using a fairly standardized definition that has three components. The first component is emotional exhaustion, and I'm using the terms from Christina Maslach, who developed this structure that we've been using. Emotional exhaustion is this idea that you're at the end of your rope with weariness. This isn't just fatigue. This is you're completely worn out by your job. And so that's one domain. And we saw that in, 40 to 45% of the physicians across the country.
Wow.
The second domain is depersonalization. And this one is, I think, particularly concerning in medicine. Because what depersonalization is treating people callously or as impersonal objects. So this idea that the shared relationship between a physician and the patient somehow deteriorates to the point where the physician is seeing that patient as simply a slot on the calendar or a diagnosis rather than a full comprehensive individual, that's what depersonalization is getting at. And that was present in close to 40% of the physicians in this study, which to me is completely inconsistent with the ideals that almost every medical student and, anyone else in healthcare professions starts their training envisioning themselves for their future. And then a third component that physicians generally do somewhat better on because of all of their training and relative achievements academically is a sense of low personal accomplishment. This idea that, well, I'm not doing enough, I'm not achieving enough, I'm not accomplishing enough. But the idea that, up to a third of physicians, despite all of their training, would still endorse feelings of, well, I haven't really accomplished what I should have, is a third leg to this whole burnout structure.
I want to come back to that depersonalization that you're concerned about, and so am I. The whole structure of medicine these days really lends itself to depersonalizing. I see physicians often, and I comment it as soon as I get the first form to fill out. It says patient name. So I get that label of patient. It's not even person name. I am a patient. And now when I go see a doctor, more often than not, there is a laptop between us. And he's typing while I'm talking. And add on to that, another physician friend of mine said that his department chair said that they really should allocate about 14 minutes per visit, for doctor visit. So all of that sets up depersonalization. It's hard to make a connection when you've got all those impediments.
And, this is Liz commenting on that depersonalization piece, it's sad because it's the connection with the patient that I think is so particularly gratifying for physicians. And so they lose one of the things that is a great motivator for continuing in medicine. And as you talk about that computer between you, I'm sure that Dr. West can attest to this, how much most physicians really hate that. I think that's been a big disappointment for many, that they have this disconnect between themselves and their patients.
Hmm. Colin, I'm curious, did your data show whether men or women are more at risk for burnout? Does it vary by specialty?
Yeah, this has been somewhat controversial, but our data has fairly consistently shown, both in this study and a prior national study of internal medicine residents, that women experience these issues to a greater degree than men. And I think there are a number of theories for why that might be, and some of it has to do with and I'll stereotype for a moment. None of these are hard and fast rules, of course, but women tend to be viewed as the more empathically oriented sex, and I think when you start getting these issues in medicine that we've already alluded to that start interfering with the relationships in medicine, that may affect women more than men. That said, the rates among men certainly aren't low. So we're talking about it being, you know, bad in both men and women, just somewhat worse among women.
And what about by specialty, Colin?
Dramatic differences by specialty, and I think many of these could be predicted just based on the conversation we've already had and the lead-in piece. The specialties that are on the front lines of care, our study found, do worse. So emergency medicine, family medicine, general internal medicine, these are our primary contact points for the healthcare system, but they also turn out to be the very same areas where, as we have changed our systems of care, we've taken away physicians' autonomy. We've made them feel like, you know, somebody used the phrase cog in a wheel, I think, in the lead-in piece. And physicians are trained to be highly autonomous, independent thinking professionals, and yet we put them into systems of care where that sort of independent reasoning is sometimes almost frowned upon because it takes time, it isn't consistent, it isn't a unified care plan, treat the same condition the same way, not recognizing, of course, that every patient is unique.
Colin,
you're
talking about the mentality of physicians or the way one's mind works. There's another factor, and let me ask you a personal question. Why did you go into medicine?
So I went into medicine for a variety of reasons. I will say selfishly, the primary motivator when I started was I was incredibly curious about how the human body worked and about science. And medical training was the deepest way I could see to further those interests. And then during medical school, as I started learning about interacting with patients, a whole new world opened up that I could combine that scientific interest with relationships with other people.
So part of what got you excited was the whole issue of relationships.
Absolutely.
And helping others. And
yes.
I think we could probably generalize about that. That's why most physicians become physicians.
I think so.
Yeah, and that gets taken away. Let's we're talking about physician burnout. Our number here is 888-477-9499. We'd love to hear from you if you're a physician and are burned out, if you were burned out and have recovered, and I'd also like to hear if you're a patient and you feel your doctor's burned out. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Let's see if we can go to the phones before we take our break. We've got Ronnie on the line. Hi, Ronnie.
Hello. How are you? Thank you so much for bringing up this topic. I am a physician. I'm actually a pediatrician. And I have gone through much of the same thing, and I honestly, the best way to describe it is I feel like a factory worker. I feel like I'm not able to spend the time that I need to with the patient, and I just need to turn the patients out because the hospital wanted us to see an X number of patients, because if not, the insurance company gets mad that they're sending the rest of the patients to the ER because we weren't able to see them in the daytime in the clinic. And I just feel like my autonomy is being taken away. My independence was being taken away. And I actually stepped back from clinical practice and I'm now doing non-clinical work. And I'm as a physician, doing medical record reviews, and I'm finding the same thing is happening. You just have to turn through the medical records. So I feel like this is not what I went into medicine for. I didn't go into medicine to just see one patient after the other and not care about them and their whole being. And that's where it gets depersonalized, because when they add 2 more patients or 10 more patients to your schedule, then you're not able to take time for that patient, and now you're just trying to get through the numbers because somebody else wants you to get that work done.
Are there any options? It sounds like you don't see reviewing medical records as a career path for yourself.
Right. That's my step away for the time being to try to reevaluate what I'm going to be doing next. We'll see how that goes. But you know, I also agree with, we always feel like we're not doing enough. I mean, physicians are notorious for not taking any sick days because we have this guilt about taking time for ourselves when we need it, even if we're sick. And it's just sort of, I think it's built into the culture. You can't get sick when you're in residency. You can't miss time when you're in residency. And then when you're out working, you can't dump your work on someone else because they're working just as hard. And now you're home, even though you're home sick, you're not contributing and helping your colleagues. And I think that's just in the culture. You just, that's built in, and you just always feel like you're not doing enough, and you always feel like you're not making it in this world.
All right.
It's
now,
really unfortunate.
All right. I am going to ask Liz to jump in quickly. And Liz, what needs to be done for Ronnie and all of the Ronnies in this country? What's the ideal?
There's not one solution. But the great thing about Ronnie is that she's talking about it, number one, that she's stepping back and looking at her career choices, number two, that she's willing to do that, because I think that takes a fair amount of personal strength after you've invested all that time and money in medical school and in your career, to be willing to step back and say, is this still working for me, and do I need to make some changes around this? Go ahead.
I want more. You know, Ronnie.
Yeah.
Now Ronnie and I have this relationship. She called my show, and now I care about her. So
yeah.
I want more for her. What are her options going forward?
Yeah. I don't know for Ronnie exactly what her future is going to bring. I think that while you're still in medicine, there are a number of things that physicians can do, that the things they do have power and control over in order to take care of themselves and to have more resilience, because what she describes is that's a pretty everyday type of experience for
exactly.
people, that sense of there's never enough time. And I can't work the way I want to work.
All right. Well, let's make this deal, Liz. You said there's a lot of things physicians can do. We've got to take a short break. When we come back,
sure.
let's talk about some of the things physicians can do. We are talking about physician burnout today, and we're talking with Colin West. He's a physician. He's at the Mayo Clinic, where much of his research focuses on physician well-being. You just heard Liz Ferrin. She's a clinical social worker at the Physicians Wellness Center in Minneapolis. Later on, we're going to hear from Erin Lockhart. She is a local hospitalist who we heard in Mike and Scott's piece. She experienced burnout and coped with it by changing jobs. Our number is 888-477-9499. We'll get to your calls also right after this break. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY-FM.
1 in 3 families is affected by problems caused by drugs or alcohol. The Family Training Program is a service for those concerned about their child, aged 12 to 25, that may be using drugs or drinking. If eligible, you will be invited to sessions with a family specialist to help make positive changes in your life and in the relationship with your child. Held in Philadelphia by the Treatment Research Institute, a supporter of WHYY. More at 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-I-WORRY-2, or online at iamconcerned.org.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
Thank you. We are back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Colin West and Liz Furin, two clinicians, medical professionals who deal with physician burnout. In a few minutes, we're going to hear from Erin Lockhart, a local hospitalist, and we'll tell you what that means later, a local hospitalist who has lived the adventure of physician burnout and survived. Our number is 888-477-9499. Colin and Liz, I wanted to talk about the impact on physicians' families, but I think we have a caller here who might be able to address it better than I. We've got Christopher on the line. Christopher?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, yes, my wife is a rural family physician up in Stonington, Maine, and what's interesting, as a full-time physician, that impact on the amount of work and hours that's involved after seeing patients, and really that take-home work and that follow-up work and just seeing the demands really taken away from the family in terms of how much time is involved and what that work-life balance ends up becoming or lack thereof. So it certainly has had an impact on our family and our decision on when do we start our own personal family and how to balance those. And what we've essentially decided to do is really my wife's going to go part-time in order to make that balance happen, or at least that she's hoping that will lend some balance.
How long has she been working those hours, Christopher?
Well, she's been working probably, I would say, about 70 hours a week for the last 2 years since she finished her residency in Reading.
And how is she? Physically, emotionally?
Struggling. I would say that she's struggling, you know, emotionally. I think one of your guests had mentioned empathy with physicians, and certainly once the paperwork is done, she brings that home in terms of the well-being of her patients. And it's nice to say that physicians can separate their work and their family life, but the health of her patients weighs on her. The amount of time that she has to deal with herself from a physical condition has certainly been compromised, which is kind of the irony of physicians treating and helping people maintain health and really not having time for themselves.
Well, and that's not to mention what might be the most important. You're talking about her physical health gets neglected, but the issue here is just as important, and that's her mental health. You know, what is she able to do to maintain her mental health, like spend time with you or yoga, meditation, exercise, you know, do something every day that brings her joy? Is there any of that in her life?
Not currently, and that was one of the decisions that we essentially decided. Fortunately, I have an income, and we live well below our means, but it was one of our decisions into saying that reducing hours is probably the first step to then evaluate and take a step back and evaluate which direction we should go from there.
Thank goodness you have that option. Christopher, thanks so much for your call.
All right, thank you very much for taking it.
Liz, one of the things Colin mentioned was one of the reasons his wife is so burned out and working all these hours is because she cares. And doctors are expected to have compassion for their patients, and I think rightly so. And of course, you know, there's something called compassion fatigue, which is a very real phenomenon. But who has compassion for physicians? And,
right.
You know, is that in the system anywhere?
I think it is, and I think it's becoming more so with just like the program you're having right now. I think there is a growing awareness of what physicians are dealing with. But it is a process, as you know, and it's going to take some time, I think, before practicing medicine is going to be more reasonable, I suppose, for lack of a better term.
And so I do think that it's really incumbent upon physicians to be doing what Christopher's wife is doing and what Ronnie is doing, which is stepping back and saying, okay, I don't like the way this is impacting me, and what do I need to do differently here in order to not lose myself and my well-being to this practice that I love?
Hmm. We've got a bunch of calls, who people who want to join the discussion. Our number, by the way, is 888-477-9499. If you're a physician, if you're a family member of a physician, if you know or love someone who's a physician, give us a call. Let's go to Suba. We've got her on the line. Suba, hi. You're on Voices.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you again for bringing this very important topic up. I was just going to comment on the issue about women in medicine, and as you were saying, I believe from the study they showed that their data consistently showed that women tend to get burnt out more than men. I am a hospitalist here in the local area and definitely was very burnt out, and that actually increased exponentially once I had my first child. And I guess my hypothesis for why women might get more burnt out than men is, at least I think more often than not, women tend to be responsible for a large majority of the things that need to be done at home and taking care of their children, in addition to everything that happens at work. And I, for one, just found that very difficult to deal with, in addition to what everyone has mentioned about why I think practicing medicine is becoming more and more difficult. But on top of all that was the guilt of not being at home and the stress of having to take care of everything at home. And similarly to your previous caller, I had to basically go part-time to be able to handle all of that. And now I definitely have much more satisfaction with work when I know that I can work for a couple weeks and then be home for a couple weeks and spend good time with my family and feel like I'm not completely missing their life. But, you know, the only way that I'm able to do that is because my husband, who's also a physician, is able to support us financially with the significant pay cut that it takes to go part-time. And just the last thing I would say that's interesting about that is it's almost frowned upon, I think. There's a lot of people that find it, you know, that just make you feel like you shouldn't be going part-time. You should be doing everything you can and working 100% in your field. So that's the other part that I think makes women feel more stressed out about this job.
Yeah, you know, some people are much more likely to absorb those expectations. Colin, I want to turn to you before we bring Aaron Lockhart on. And you know, somebody mentioned residency training. We're talking a lot about the expectations physicians live with. Somebody brought up, you know, how grueling residency training was. It's almost like a fraternity hazing. There's a quality of it that's almost mean-spirited about it. Is it changing?
I think it actually has changed quite a bit. In 2003, the major accrediting body for graduate medical education, including residency training, put in place limits on the number of hours per week that residents or fellows could work. Those were not, for the most part, targeted at burnout. They were targeted at fatigue, because there's literature from the sleep world that overly fatigued physicians are more likely to make mistakes. The interesting thing about those regulations is that there's good data that they've dramatically reduced fatigue during the training process, and most residents would say, comparing pre versus post, that things like, you know, work-life balance have been improved. However, the amount of work that has to be done within the restricted number of work hours hasn't decreased very much, if at all. And so the work intensity has actually ramped up in many training programs. And so as a result of that, we've not seen any decrease in burnout rates as a result of those duty-hour regulations.
It's interesting. It's sort of created some new problems, which probably Dr. Westy sees as well, where we have the newer physicians coming in with less work experience than physicians from the past. And
absolutely.
And also with a different mindset around work-life balance. And so now we have some generational stresses and tensions that exist in the workplace.
Yeah, and I think the generational piece, it's an important one because our newer medical graduates have different definitions of what's acceptable to them, and they also are bringing a different social structure with them. So the caller mentioned, you know, she's a physician, her husband's also a physician. Two physician families 50 years ago were almost unheard of. In fact, the traditional approach was, you know, this sort of Hollywood idea that the husband was the breadwinner who went to work, and he might work 80 or 90 hours a week, but he didn't have responsibilities at home. The wife would raise the children, take care of the homestead, all of this sort of thing. Those were her jobs. They didn't pay financially, but they were other important responsibilities, and there was this sort of division of labor, and everyone sort of settled into their role. Well, society has evolved. Things have moved forward, or at least moved differently, and it's very common now. In fact, there are more female medical students than male medical students now. And we have not, as a culture of medicine, figured out how to adapt to different expectations, and medicine as an entire structure has to adapt to that. It's not up to the medical students and the residents and the new physicians to adapt their expectations to medicine. Medicine has to adapt to them.
Oh, boy, is that well said. You know, and Colin, in my tribe, we say from your mouth to God's ears. Boy, is that true. We've got to take a short break. I've been promising everybody that we're going to hear from Aaron Lockhart, and we will in just 60 seconds. We're talking about physician burnout with Colin West, who is at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and his research focus is on physician well-being. Liz Fearn is a clinical social worker at the Physician Wellness Center in Minneapolis. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
University of the Sciences in Philadelphia supports WHYY. University of the Sciences offers undergraduate degree programs that lead to careers in the sciences and healthcare. Students can attend an open house and learn about starting or furthering their career in pharmacy, chemistry, forensic science, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and more. Student research and campus life are also presented. Open house details at usciences.edu/openhouse.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking about physician burnout with Colin West and Liz Fearn. And now we're going to be joined with Erin Lockhart. She's a hospitalist at a small community hospital. She was profiled in Mike and Story we heard earlier in the show. So, Erin, first of all, thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having this discussion.
The word hospitalist came up several times, so explain yourself.
It's a physician involved in the care of acutely ill individuals, primarily in the hospital setting.
So now when you're admitted to a hospital, your doctor is a hospitalist and not the doctor who sent you there.
Often so. That's the model that's becoming most dominant now.
So what's that like for you?
I enjoy the acute care aspect. I like working with my other staff in a kind of focused setting, trying to take care of someone who's really in need. One thing that I've enjoyed in my new position is a lot more communication with primary care practitioners at the beginning of the hospitalization and at the end.
So let's go back to your old experience. You were in a big city teaching hospital.
That's correct.
And what happened?
Well, after doing a my residency in the same environment. I was working under a lot of pressure and also in a career field that's relatively new. So administration and other physicians didn't always know how to treat us. We were doing a job that was traditionally done by house staff. So there was a lot of pressure and a lot of watching, especially my colleagues, leave the profession quite quickly. It was hard.
When you say pressure, you're talking about the outside pressure. What was happening inside of you?
Wow, that has the expectation that I could identify it myself. I just started feeling more and more that I was feeling pressure from every side and not able to actualize my practice the way I wanted to.
Yeah, and as soon as I said what was happening inside of you, you grabbed your chest as though that's where, you know, you're tight, and apparently that was a bad memory for you.
Right.
Yeah. When did you realize you were burned out?
I was kind of pushed to the edge of my abilities when I had to be available to an ill family member, and I realized I just couldn't cope with it all anymore. I needed a change.
What was happening to you?
I was having a difficult time switching between night shifts and day shifts, a lot of insomnia, a lot of moments at work where I needed to go leave the room and hide for a minute and collect myself. And those weren't necessarily typical of me.
Yeah, I wonder as I listen to you about the physicians who really do need to leave the room and collect themselves and don't. What happens to them? Sounds like you never stopped caring. You know, we talked with Colin West early in the show about depersonalization, where, you know, you just shut down and see your patients not as people, but as, you know, symptoms. Sounds like that didn't happen with you.
It didn't happen in the direction of me depersonalizing other individuals. It was almost as though I was depersonalizing myself, and as mentioned in the lead-in story, becoming a cog in a wheel, and I didn't like that feeling.
When did you leave and why?
Last summer, I finished my job, and for the reasons that we've stated.
How long had you suffered before you left?
Probably 2 years.
Why?
Because I felt that I would eventually develop the resilience necessary that I could surmount these difficulties.
Yeah, Colin, she sounds like a doctor to me when she says that.
It's part of our culture.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's good news and bad news, isn't it?
It is. We mentioned before this idea that, you know, physicians feel this intense responsibility for their patients. They feel guilty when things don't go the way they're supposed to, or if they're not available, you know, 24 hours a day. And that has its adaptive advantages. You know, you want your physician to be looking out for you as a patient. As a physician, you want to be incentivized to continue to stay on the cutting edge of your field. But of course, as with so many things, you tip that balance too far in the wrong direction, and when do you step off of the treadmill? And physicians are notoriously terrible at knowing when they should step off the treadmill.
Liz, I want to turn to you. You know, we talked about what's available for physicians, and we've got a caller who also wants to know what resources exist for them. What is being done? What can be done? I've got to tell you, I had a reaction to something Colin said. I forget specifically what you said, Colin, but, you know, I'm listening to you talk, and I'm looking across the desk here at Erin, and I'm thinking, you know, if my doctor is suffering when he or she is in the room with me, boy, you know, I might be a freak patient here, but, boy, I want to know it. I want to be able to care for my physician's well-being. It would help me as a patient and would help the doctor. Now, I know damn well that's not taught in residency training.
No, I think that it's a multifaceted solution. Certainly there are things that need to be done by the organization to support physicians. lots of changes that need to be made. But let's talk a little bit about what the physician themselves can do. And I don't want to blame the victim here, and at the same time, it's vitally important. It's kind of a must-do, I think, for most physicians out there, that they develop ways to build their resiliency. And, you know, what our program is one where we're a first responder for physicians. You know, we're probably familiar with employee assistance programs. We have an employee assistance program that's for physicians only. And so we have peer coaches that are available, and we have licensed professionals like myself. But regardless, we're people who really understand what physicians are facing out there. And I think even just starting to talk about it is so important for these very independent, autonomous individuals. People ask me, what are the patterns you see? I say, you know, the first thing I see is people saying, wow, until I talked to you, I hadn't realized just how much truly was on my plate.
How do they get to you? If they hadn't realized how burned out they are, how do they get to you?
You know, we're a program like ours is one that has a lot of outreach involved in it, so that we're going out into the workplace and we're doing presentations and we're meeting with people individually and we're really getting the word out there. Secondly, you know, if there's buy-in from administration, that goes a long way to kind of normalize a service like this and to let the physician, it's kind of permission giving. You know, take advantage of it. Use this. You know, we can all benefit from something like this. But again, I think a lot is around mindset, and it's about challenging oneself around perfectionism. It's around giving oneself permission to be good enough, not to be perfect, to just be good enough, because in today's healthcare world, that's kind of a necessity. To take breaks, you know, all kinds of research out there to suggest what benefit that is to individuals just to take a break during the middle of the day.
I have spoken to physicians who said they don't have time to take a break. I've recommended 5 minutes between patients to just sit and breathe and just check in with your life, with your body, just see how it's feeling. And I've had physicians tell me they don't have 5 minutes.
Yeah, they're not making time to take that 5 minutes. I mean, truly. And when I talk with people, I say, this is a must-do. And so something's got to give. Something's got to go. If you can't take that time, then something's got to change in your practice. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I agree completely that there are both personal and organizational responsibilities here for the solutions. And what we've focused our work on the last 10 years is just to get this to be something that people talk about as a first step. And that has started to develop momentum to where we can start seeing more solutions. As far as the physician saying, you know, I can't find 5 minutes, that speaks to the environment in medicine that has developed as well, because with everything being so business-oriented as opposed to relationship-oriented, what happens in many practices is, well, you get 15 or 20 minutes to see your patient. Oh, you mean you've got to dictate and do your documentation and your paperwork? Well, that's not part of that 15 or 20 minutes. So that's all end-of-the-day stuff. And one of our callers earlier alluded to this, I think, about his wife bringing things home and having 2 or 3 hours a day of work at home that still had to be done. And, of course, none of that is directly reimbursed, but it's still expected. And sometimes when physicians say, I can't find the time during the day, it's because they're feeling the burden of all of that other stuff that really isn't why they got into medicine in the first place and ends up being a distraction.
Yeah, of course, my argument is, and I know from other bodies of research, that if they did take those 5 minutes, 2 minutes between patients, they would work more efficiently. I mean, it's kind of a little nap for the brain.
It would pay for itself.
Right. I want to talk about the institutional issues, and I want to talk about them with you, Aaron. So you're in a new hospital, and there's a different psychology there. You alluded to somebody coming up to you and saying, how are you?
That's true. We're having regular meetings to talk about how to make our jobs more sustainable for the individuals I work with.
So where does that mentality come from?
not sure I know exactly how to answer that, but I think that our leadership has just learned through experience that getting a good core group of physicians requires getting their input and sustaining them based on what they feel they need in their job and work environment.
Colin, is that realistic? How can we change the mentality of institutions, especially large ones like yours or here in Philadelphia, you know, University of Pennsylvania, Temple?
Yeah. Well, I think a big part of it is that institutions need to fight the urge to treat physicians as workers on the assembly line. There's something that physicians are trained to do that involves relationships, involves autonomy, involves respect for what gives their lives meaning. And enlightened institutions, they understand that, and they understand this idea that you mentioned that if somebody, you know, if they took a couple of minutes, it would pay for itself. Enlightened organizations are beginning to understand, it's very slow, and yeah. This is just starting to take off, but beginning to understand that if they take care of their physicians take better care of the patients, the physicians stay, and they don't have the turnover.
And
that's all good for the organization.
And I want to conclude by your wonderful language again, enlightened institutions. I want to thank all three of you for joining us today. Colin West, you just heard Liz Farron, who's with Physicians Wellness in Minneapolis. Aaron Lockhart, a local hospitalist who is doing much better. Thanks to all three of you for joining us.
Thank you.
And I do want to make a comment. So many of you responded to last week's show on caring. You've gotten involved in your communities. We're going to be following that up on subsequent shows. Next week, we're going to be talking about the autumn years of our lives. You can comment on today's show or listen to it again by going to whyy.org/voices. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Fred Snyder. Elizabeth Perez-Loon is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Joshua Rafeman is our intern who answered the phones today. Nice job, Josh. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. And I'm Dan Gottlieb. Hey, enjoy your week, my friend.
Tell Me More is next on WHYY.